RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome, welcome, welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. It's Wednesday, Frank.
It is.
Do you want to know what happened last minute yesterday?
I think I have an idea, but go ahead and tell us.
I sent a message out to Dr. McCullough and I said, hey, I'd really love to have you back on. I know how busy you are. Is there any way that you'd be able to come back and join us on the show? And he wrote back about, I don't know, a half hour later and said, how about now? So I said, okay. So I did an interview with Dr. McCullough yesterday.
And when does that come out?
Right now, right after we do our little half hour introduction here today.
Can I tell you something? This guy is doing God's work.
Seriously.
He really is. I mean, it's funny because I was just, I had a buddy of mine send me the link to the Joe Rogan episode he did, which was so pivotal.
Oh yeah.
Pivotal. It's amazing. And I said, you know, it's amazing, dude. We got to interview him. I think, well, how many times has he been on the show? Once or twice?
Just once.
Once. I said, we got to interview him a few months ago. And it was so amazing. And to see him doing the press circuit like this and getting, these are the biggest shows on earth that he's doing now. I mean, it doesn't matter whether to say, oh, I went on television. You're not really being seen by that many people. When you start going on shows like Rogan and you're doing the podcast circuit, this is where people are going to have their brains stimulated and to have some kind of conversation that is worthy of listening to. And maybe carrying on in your own circle of friends and family. This is where it's really all at. And man, he doesn't mince words. He is an unimpeachable source, unimpeachable credentials. It's I can't wait to listen to what you did with him.
Yeah, there's one question that you had wanted me to ask him about trusting doctors again. And yeah, his answer is pretty interesting, which I don't want to kind of give it away. It's the very last question.
Well, the reason why I asked it, Tracy, is because there's more and more happening. I told you last December when they started making the shots available, they already started with the ultimatums for people like there's at least one person very close to me that had to go in for surgery on a kidney, and they were not allowed to get this life-saving procedure without getting this shot. That was just being rolled out. And, you know, that's one thing right there. The other thing is like, okay, well, all right, I'm in good health. I don't need to go to a hospital. I can stay out of it. Well, what if you slip and compound fracture your leg? What if all of a sudden you wake up one morning with stomach pain, you have appendicitis? You know, these are things that just come on out of nowhere that it's always, thank God you were close enough to a hospital. But I get such anxiety sometimes thinking about a knock on wood, please don't let it happen, situation where, God forbid, you have to be put out. I mean, can you trust the people in the room to not vaccinate you while you're sleeping?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's things like this that would have been considered crazy 3 years ago, but it's not, because as he said in his conversation with Joe Rogan, when you think about this kind of walking zombie like, I don't know, zombie-like conditions that most healthcare providers are living through right now. It's crazy. It's there's, I don't know.
It is. It's a crazy world we're in right now, for sure. You can't deny that, no matter who you are, really. Whether you are on the other side of the issues that we're on or this side, like, it reminds me of what's his name, Brian Williams, when he stepped down and he made that message. Did you hear it?
Yeah, I did. It makes you wonder who the hell he's even talking to.
Right. I mean, is he talking? It could be taken one way or the other way.
That's the exact point I made. You know how when you share a quote or something that you think is going to really cut cut to the core.
And it ends up being from some crazy like psychopath.
No. It could be like Mark Twain or something. Somebody who is just known for his good work and his intellectualism and all that stuff. But the problem is that the person at the other end of the computer who sees that, sees you posting it, is applying that to somebody else and not to themselves, which they probably should be applying it to themselves. Yeah. Yeah. Like you don't know why people are making certain statements, and you don't know how the hell everybody is going to take it, because we're living among people who are in different, you know, different fractals of reality.
Fractals is a great word, because there are many of them, many all around. And, you know, the Rogan interview he did was fantastic. It was just truth. It was just truth. As a matter of fact, just so that everybody knows, you know, he asked me if I would share this in the show notes, and I've shared it elsewhere too, and I have absolutely zero problem with it. There's a give, send, go for him to raise some funds for some legal fees and some support that he needs. And I'll tell you, he probably does really need it. So I'm going to put that in the show notes below. If you feel so inclined to share with one of the doctors who is like, you know, been from the very beginning doing the right thing, trying to save lives, whatever. I tried to get into some epidemiological like detail about ADE and things like that, but we really only had a half an hour and we kind of stayed a little more surface level. But I did ask him one question he said he's never gotten before, which I thought was cool because, you know, he's used to answering normally the same stuff from everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. It had to do with how there have been studies coming out that certain SSRI medications are really beneficial to helping prevent hospitalization and death in COVID. And
oh boy.
I also wanted to ask him, because he was talking about how he, when he got COVID, it was back in September of 2020, and he had it sequenced. So he knew he had the alpha variant. And I wanted to say, so now can we put to bed this entire thing about never having sequenced the genome of COVID? Because there are people out there, they've never isolated it. It doesn't exist. I can assure you that that's not true. And I've said it a million times. It's now defunct and gone. But when COVID first came out, Frank, and we were just rumbling about it very early on, they had uploaded this genome to the internet. I saw it with my own eyes. It was leaked from China. Certain people who were blogging on this very early, scientists and the like, had grabbed it and downloaded it. And then it was removed from the internet.
Mm.
So I personally, now can I read a genome of a virus? No, but I personally saw it. And experts at the time were saying, yeah, this is it. This is exactly what we're dealing with here. And then it was almost like somebody within a lab in China was trying to get information out to the rest of the world and then was silenced.
So, it's just spooky, right?
Super spooky. Super spooky. Yes.
Damn.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had prepared a few things today, not many, because I don't want to go too far into things before we get to Dr. McCullough. What?
Nothing.
What?
Go ahead.
What?
Nothing. I was just nothing. Go ahead, please.
I have a culmination of TikToks that I want to play. And
oh, no.
Well, they lead into what we talked about and why you asked your question.
Oh, yeah. No, I know which, because I saw that. I shared this from your Telegram. I know exactly which ones you're going to play.
Terrible.
And this makes my stomach just drop into my shoes.
So this woman that you're about to hear, I hope you can hear it on the microphone because she's whispering in the first video. You're going to have to tell me if you can hear it or not. I'll raise my volume up a little bit. She's saying, she's in the hospital for some reason in the emergency department, and she starts recording this video to talk about what she hears going on around her. And in summary, should I tell the summary or just play it?
It's 7 minutes worth of TikToks. So I think you should just, since we're strapped for time, you should just give the summary.
All right. So maybe I don't even have to play all of them. Maybe I'll just play the second two. What she ends up saying basically is that there is a man who called his primary care physician to ask for advice because his child wasn't feeling well. And on the conversation, he ends up telling the doctor that he had been giving his children ivermectin in prophylaxis for COVID-19. Well, the doctor freaks out and says, this can cause all kinds of adverse reactions. You have to get him to the emergency room right away. And the guy basically says, okay, and hangs up the phone and then does not bring his son. Okay. What this sets off is a chain reaction of events where the doctor, I'm assuming, calls all the hospitals, gets CPS involved. CPS goes to a court and gets an order to take the man's children away from him the second he sets foot on hospital property. The nurses and administrators in this video are running around calling and investigating the dude's social media.
Yeah, no, that's the scariest part. Like they're getting teams of nurses to go and scour his Facebook.
Yep. Yep. And it turns out that he's actually a former state representative in New Hampshire. And this woman is recording all of this going on in the hospital around her, and she can't believe what she's experiencing. She's like, this is crazy. So where we're going to pick up from right now is where she's doing updates to the video. And I should actually probably go and check her TikTok and see if there's more. But let me fast forward through the first 3 minutes where she's whispering about what's going on around her. Here is the first update video.
They're trying to take people's kids now.
I feel like there's a few things I need to add about that other video that I posted. So the guy was not at the hospital. Like, let me just make that clear. He wasn't there. So this guy called his PCP and was like, oh, my child is like not feeling well, blah, blah, blah. And then said, yeah, I've been giving them ivermectin as a preventative for COVID. And the PCP was like, oh, there's adverse reactions. It can blah, 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 blah. You need to bring them to Elliott right now, which is the other hospital in Manchester. And the guy was like, okay. And then never brought him to Elliot, never brought the child to Elliot. And because he didn't bring the child to Elliot, Elliot contacted the PCP, the PCP and Elliot called DCF. DCF had already filed to take this person's child and were awarded the removal of this person's two teenage children. I know this person's name. I have not said it out loud because I believe in some sort of privacy, because obviously his life is going to hell right now. I do know that he was a politician in the state of New Hampshire. And because they made sure that this person who was talking about it, the social worker, was like, oh yeah, this guy was a state representative in 2018. And so she, Elliott Hospital, Manchester PD, all of these people were trying to get these kids. And they were hoping, because they didn't go to Elliott, that they were going to come to CMC. That is the reason I posted this, because I looked for him on Facebook, couldn't find him. I had reached out to a few of my friends who kind of know like politicians, like state representatives, and I tried to find this person, and I could not reach out to him. So the only thing that I thought of was, hey, let me make a TikTok and hopefully it will get to him. So it was not even confirmed that the ivermectin was causing this child to have any sort of adverse reactions. I don't know the whole depth of it, but pretty much like they were going onto this man's Facebook, printing out pictures, sending out mass emails across both CMC and Elliot to show everyone what this person looks like, so that if he did bring his kids in, that DCF and Manchester PD could take his kids. It's really this woman literally was calling other DCFs around the state, like other offices. I feel like there's a few things.
And there's another one.
I'm also going to add that the PCP also told him to take a 17-year-old to the hospital, even though the 17-year-old was showing no reaction at all to the ivermectin.
I wish I knew a little bit more about why, like what the 17-year-old was going through. He's not feeling good, so she.
No, the 17-year-old was fine.
It was the other one?
Yeah.
Okay, what was the other one going through?
Well, they never get into any detail because I right. guess they didn't explain that with what she could overhear. Let me see real quick if there's anything else on her TikTok today. Oh, goodness. Let's see.
See, I mean, that's just, that's horrendous.
Yeah.
That's her. And here's the thing. In New Hampshire is like a pretty sane bastion in the middle of very, very blue, insane New England. And we were talking about the political climate shifting more and more toward libertarian, freedom loving, liberty loving cultures there in New Hampshire for years now. And it's really seemed shown that to be true in the last couple of elections. But this is another one of my things here is where you're talking about a blue state or you're talking about a red state. The real thing is that the institutions are under control by these crazy statist authoritarian types of people. And so it's not so much about, okay, well, what kind of a state do you live in? Under what kind of state government? It's more so where can you find a county anywhere in this country in which there is a hospital system that believes in informed consent and is not run by absolute lunatics? Because just living in a red state doesn't mean that you're not going to be living in a red state doesn't mean you're necessarily going to be in a good school district or in living within a good hospital network.
You know, the crazy thing about what you just said is look what happened in Florida with that ER doctor that time.
Precisely.
You know, he was in the hospital trying to save the life of somebody next to him that he knew had bacterial pneumonia because the guy had designated him as medical proxy. And they literally imprisoned him for trying to help in Florida.
That's Florida. You know, this is what I'm talking about. So it's all you got to get out of your state. It's not they rule institutions and institutions are in every state.
Yeah, they are. Here's an update. I haven't listened to it yet. Hopefully it's something of value here.
To add that when I first went in there to like get checked in, the nurse that was up front when he asked me if I was vaccinated and I was like, no, he was like, oh, come on, man. And I was like, yeah, sorry. And then the same thing happened with my nurse. He was like, saying that he wishes people would just listen to their doctors and not what they see on Facebook and TikTok and stuff.
You'll listen to the right doctors, right?
Yeah. Like, don't listen to Dr. McCullough because he's not the right he's not the right doctor. 6 months ago or a year ago, if Dr. McCullough would have walked into any medical institution on this planet, people would have been like, oh my God, that's Dr. McCullough. That's how, you know, well-respected he was. Now he's just a crazy conspiracy theorist kook, Frank, you know?
Yep. Conspiracy theorist kook.
And I'll tell you, Joe Rogan reaches tens of millions of people, tens of millions. And that interview that he gave was 2 hours and 40 minutes long. If you are a sane person with any thinking brain, you were riveted to every last second of it. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And let me just say, it goes from 0 to 100 in 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, within the first 15 minutes alone, you have elephant sized bombs dropped in your lap. And it just doesn't stop.
Well, and it's stuff that we've lived through and reported on the entire time. So to us, it's like, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm, yep. But to somebody who doesn't know, hearing about the worldwide execution of the censorship or denial of hydroxychloroquine to the population when it was known to be beneficial in COVID and how they actually went through and skewed the studies. And here again, we had this conversation. These doctors are waking up and opening their eyes. And imagine learning that everything that you had ever known is a lie. That's where they are. And they're experiencing it firsthand. Like, they're in the middle of a room with their family. And their family is all gaslighting them at the same exact time, telling them this isn't happening. You're crazy. Blah, 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 blah. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
But they know what usually happens, or they thought they knew. And they're seeing these unprecedented things going on right in front of their faces. And then they're being excommunicated from the community that they founded in many cases. Insane. Just yes. Insane.
It is.
So there's that. And then I had this little more lighthearted sort of thing that was on Citizen Free Press. Really funny. There was apparently some incident with a Instacart delivery in Minneapolis, Minnesota. There's a press release put out by the police department there. On December 6th, an elderly couple reported that they had placed a grocery order from a local Cub Foods and requested delivery via the Instacart delivery service. They reported that once they got notification the driver was at their house, they decided to meet the driver outside due to the amount of snow in their driveway and being worried about the driver getting stuck if they had to pull into the driveway. I would be out there helping them shovel. When the couple opened the front door, the delivery driver yelled back at them to check inside of their Christmas wreath. They also reported the driver was driving back and forth in the driveway. Upon checking inside the wreath, they located the receipt from the grocery order with a derogatory message. After the delivery driver left, they found that their groceries had been run over in the driveway.
Oh, is this okay? I think I heard about this one. Go ahead.
Yeah. After reviewing the context of the written message, it appears that the delivery driver's actions were in response to a sign supporting law enforcement that is in the homeowner's front yard. Now, this last paragraph kind of makes me happy. The homeowners received a full refund from Instacart and an outpouring of support from the community. The delivery driver has been identified and the investigation continues with charges likely in the near future. Please note that while it's wonderful to see the community support for this family, we can't accept donations for them at the police department. Thank you once again to our wonderful Blaine community for the support that you've shown to this family. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I saw that the person, the driver was a purple haired, gender confused nut job.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
So we'll just generalize.
Well, it's basically every single one of them. I can't ever dye my hair purple again.
Nope. And Lauren went a very nice lavendery purple just a few years ago. But I mean, man, they have taken everything. They've destroyed everything. They've destroyed the rain. How do you destroy the rainbow?
Oh, I know.
How do you co-opt and destroy the rainbow?
Of all things.
Oh, my God. I can't even look at one anymore.
That's sad.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I have an update on GOP goings on, Frank, but I don't want to put it in the show. I don't want to taint the Peter McCullough show with this nonsense. Isn't that something?
You're talking about the January 6th nonsense?
No, I'm talking about the local GOP, GOP nonsense that's going on.
So yeah. We'll save it for some other day, I guess.
Friday, because you're going to want to hear it. It's something else. So without further ado, guys, let's get to Dr. Peter McCullough, and listen to this interview and share it with your friends, and also consider giving to his GoFundMe or GiveSendGo, I'm sorry, that is in the show notes. We'll see you on Friday.
Later.
So I am blessed to be joined once more after a 4-month hiatus by Dr. Peter McCullough, who in those 4 months has accomplished quite a bit. And I'd like to, have him speak with all of you guys today about some very specific things that I've been kind of poring over. Dr. McCullough, you guys have started the Unity Project. You're really focused over there, doing amazing things with lots of good tangibles for people that they can use. What is it about the kids in particular that really has you kind of passionate? Because there's been a lot of work poured in there.
Well, thanks for having me back on the show, Tracy. Just for a reintroduction, I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm a practicing internist, cardiologist, trained epidemiologist. Based in Dallas, Texas, I spend about half my time in patient care, like I will a little bit later on today. I have patient appointments. And then the rest of the time in academic work, I'm an author and an editor and a clinical scholar. I've spent the last 2 years now focused on COVID-19. And the question regarding the children is one where it's, in a sense, a lot of good news. The children have been largely spared of COVID-19. In the September and October FDA meetings concerning childhood immunization, in the meeting minutes, there was general agreement through May that 40% of the children in the United States have already had COVID-19. My estimates are now, with the Delta outbreak, which was substantial in the United States, that we probably have 80% of children have already had COVID-19. They're already through it. For them, the pandemic is over with. They have complete and durable, robust immunity. And we know that because now, Tracy, all the children are back in school and there's no COVID-19 outbreaks. None.
Yes.
So basically it's over with for the children. This is great news. I think parents ought to be rest assured. We're going into the holiday season. The children can see their grandparents. Everybody can get back together again. The COVID-19 pandemic is over with for kids. The only thing I tell parents is that they still have to pay attention to symptoms. So if a child develops symptoms such as the cold, nasal congestion, stuffy nose, fever, generally feel bad, those children should stay at home. They shouldn't go visit grandmother that day. And even whether it's a regular common cold, influenza or COVID-19, doesn't matter. They shouldn't, give an elderly person a viral infection. And as long as we have those caveats, we're good.
Yeah, I mean, that's common sense. I think it's been that way for most of my life anyway. You know, my son came down with COVID during the Delta wave. We were all prophylactically treating ourselves at the time. None of the adults in the house got infected. I know that kids don't typically give this to adults, but my daughter didn't get it. And I'm still a virgin too, Dr. McCullough, and my husband is as well. We have not had COVID yet, and we're obviously uninjected. So we've just been kind of floating around watching what's going on. And with Omicron, I just read an article that it looks like 70% of these cases are among young, what they'd say, healthy, vaccinated, under 40s. What do you have to say about how Omicron is spreading and the genetic makeup of it, et cetera?
Omicron is the most mutated form of the virus at this point in time. A lot of little kids think it's a transformer, Tracy, but it's not. It's not the next villain to Optimus Prime. In fact, it is a letter in the Greek alphabet. It was discovered on the border of Botswana among young, healthy, vaccinated travelers. And I think it's an evolutionary mistake with 30 mutations in the spike protein, 10 in the receptor binding domain, 3 insertions, 1 deletion is highly dysmorphic. All experts agree it looks like it's going to completely escape any effect of the vaccines at all. It did arise in those fully vaccinated. Our CDC has put out a report now just a few days ago that 79% of everybody with Omicron is actually fully vaccinated.
And you've been going into some detail, too, about the PCR tests and how they can sequence for Omicron now, even without like the typical sequencing that you have to send off because there's a difference in the proteins.
Right. So it doesn't it's not a form of sequencing, but the PCR tests use basically 4 primers. One is for the spike protein. It's called the S gene. One's for the nucleocapsid, one's for the envelope, and the other one's for the RNA-dependent polymerase. And so this, because the spike protein is so dysmorphic, the strands of base pairs in RNA that code for the spike protein are sufficiently different, or they're different in the critical areas in Omicron. That's what's called S gene dropout. So the PCR will have a pattern where it won't see the S gene, or the primer for the spike protein won't be seen. So it's possible that if a PCR is using that primer or in a configuration, it could identify Omicron. Now, the public health agencies will use full genomic sequencing, which is very accurate. There's already a paper out on Omicron by Venkata Krishnan et al. From Inference, a company in Boston. They're doing incredible work there. And Omicron actually has so many unique mutations now. It's a divergence from the other strains that we're going to be reliant on new modeling. So Dr. Fantini in France at Omosse University in France has done the first modeling through private communications, has indicated that the overall transmissibility index, which again is theoretical, but it's based off of what we know in the receptor binding domain. Let me give you some background. So the Wuhan wild type, which is now extinct, but it had a transmissibility index at 2.16. Delta, which is largely 99% of what we have now, Tracy, transmission index of 10.67. Omicron, based on this work, has come in at a transmission index of 3.990. So what this means is it's going to be less transmissible than Delta, almost certainly. So it can't overtake Delta because Delta is more transmissible. And the other thing that we would anticipate, I think it'll carve out an ecological niche, just like Lambda did out of South America and Epsilon out of California. But it won't overtake Delta because Delta is just too contagious. It's too transmissible. And Delta is basically freely moving among vaccinated person to vaccinated person now. And we are seeing this, and it's relatively obvious that this is happening. And now we're seeing this in broad populations and in publications. So we know that our CDC director came out this summer and said, you know, it's possible that the vaccinated will transmit the Delta to one another. We just didn't know how frequent it would be. And now that some countries are really almost fully vaccinated, Israel fully vaccinated with boosters, we know that the United Kingdom is fully vaccinated and certainly giving out boosters. In those countries, the majority of people hospitalized and those dying with COVID-19, again, the Delta variant, are indeed those fully vaccinated. And it's because of the fact that the vaccinated can, in a sense, foster replication of the virus in the nose and mouth, particularly if they don't do any oral nasal decontamination. The virus just breeds there. And then when they cough or sneeze, then they spread it to someone else. And so the paper that recently showed that was by Annika Singhanagayam, and that was published in Lancet. And in that paper, they did very careful case contact tracing between September 13th, September 15th, and 602 community subjects. They did a wonderful job. They ascertained in that paper, Tracy, that 39% of transmission occurred from fully vaccinated to fully vaccinated individuals.
So that's something that you know, folks who have any basic epidemiological training have been saying was going to happen with a leaky vaccine for a very long time. I have kind of two tangents of questions based off the stuff you just said. We'll start here with Omicron. There were some work being done in Italy early this year with monoclonals and how many times, you know, virus introduced to these monoclonal antibodies would, how many times of introduction it would take before they basically mutated to evade the monoclonal antibody treatment. And there was a theory floating around out there that this variant could have been born from either that or is because of a vaccinated population like in Italy, Israel and in the UK that caused these weird mutations. And then separately, there's a theory that this was like another lab leak experiment where they were doing gain of function and kind of threw a cold virus in there. And, you know, some bacteria, E. coli bacteria was used. Do you have anything that can guide people on what this is or if it's really a quickly naturally mutated, you know, SARS-CoV-2 or what's the deal with it?
It's clear that it didn't arise because of the use of monoclonal antibodies because, you know, those are used in elderly sick people and just in some countries. We use a lot of monoclonal antibodies in the United States and they're very effective. We do know that, for instance, the first monoclonal antibody approved in November of 2020. Remember, the monoclonal antibodies were the first product of Operation Warp Speed, and they came well ahead of the vaccines, very effective, bamlanivimab. There was a mutation from the wild type alpha and then to the beta, I believe, that escaped the ability of bamlanivimab to work. So it was actually pulled off the market quickly, appropriately so. And then bamlanivimab has been reintroduced with ertesivimab. Now there's two monoclonal antibodies that are used in combination, but our workhorse through the year has been Regeneron. That's carisivimab and indomivab. That's worked out well. We saw President Trump receive that and Governor Abbott, where the vaccine failed, he received it. And podcaster Joe Rogan, I was just with him last week on his show yesterday. Podcaster Joe, he got Regeneron.
I have a lot of friends now who got it too.
Right. And Tracy, now we're using GlaxoSmithKline, which is sotrovimab. This is tremendous. This actually is not directly against code on the spike protein, but against the glycoprotein moiety on attached to the spike protein. And so this is not going to be subject to mutation. So I think the GlaxoSmithKline is going to work against all variants, which looks terrific. And in the published randomized trial in New England Journal of Medicine, recently, it was associated with an 85% reduction in hospitalization and death. So monoclonal antibodies are just absolutely shining. We have plenty of them over. I want everyone here listening, if they're still susceptible to COVID-19 and they're over 65 for sure, all my patients, I don't even ask any questions. We get it going right away, day one. And then over age 50 with medical problems, we go ahead and get these antibodies. I ask everybody on the show, who's still susceptible to COVID-19 to make a few phone calls and know where their monoclonal antibody centers are, what the hours of operation is, and do they need an appointment or is it first come, first serve? Now, back to Omicron, it's clear it arose in some fully vaccinated travelers who weren't sick. It's clear so far that it's mild, that it has relatively little symptoms. There's only now one death reported worldwide. We don't know the circumstances of it. In the CDC report, there was no deaths, just one hospitalization, which was unnecessary since we know early treatment can stop these hospitalizations. But there are some theories that it's so heavily mutated that, my conclusion, which I stated on Fox News the day this broke, was that it was an evolutionary mistake, or B, that something has happened. In fact, there is some homologous code with other respiratory illnesses. So maybe there was a concurrent respiratory illness, and just through the wonders of recombination through replication, that the virus picked up some code from another virus, and in a sense, there was a fusion. The experts have agreed so far it's not enough to jump phylogeny. And jumping phylogeny would mean, you know, going to SARS-CoV-3.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened yet. It's still SARS-CoV-2. And as far as we can tell, based on the patterns, people who are already immune to alpha, beta, gamma, delta, lambda, epsilon, you know, people have had a whole variety of these strains, that they're fully immune to Omicron.
So if what you're saying is true about transmissibility of this thing, why in the ever-living hell are we hearing, you know, Boris Johnson in the UK saying there's a big tidal wave of this coming? Are they going to mask it as Delta to keep their booster program going? Like, what's the purpose behind this, in your opinion?
I think people have been so conditioned to seeing a strain come and then developing some proportionality. So before the vaccines, don't forget we had wild type, and just one mutation in the spike protein, it became the alpha. And that was in Britain. Alpha was probably the majority of what American had. Originally in New York and Wuhan and probably Detroit and New Jersey, they had wild type. But the rest of us, as COVID-19 took off last year, had alpha. So I was in Texas, Dallas, Texas. My wife and I got it in October of 2020. We were in research, and so we were genotyped. We had alpha. So I know what I had. I can tell you now, we have 99% Delta. The next person in the United States who gets COVID-19, it's Delta until proven otherwise. And I have to tell you, I think Delta has been formidable. It's been so contagious. I've had young people get Delta. I think it is serious. I take it very seriously. I do not think COVID at all should be minimized. And the risk stratification methods and the treatment methods that we've devised, and I've published in two seminal papers in 2020, it's part of all the home treatment guides. Separately, the Frontline Critical Care Consortium have come up with their own methods with similar principles. I think America should be reassured that doctors working in separate groups arrived at the same conclusions. This is very reassuring that early treatment is on the right track, that these methods are enormously effective. 85% reductions in hospitalizations and death, not even factoring in the monoclonal antibodies. I told Joe Rogan that I think almost all the hospitalizations and deaths should be avoided. So there's no reason for alarm for Boris Johnson to sound the alarm. I just think they're conditioned to, before you know it, having these variants take on, in a sense, their own epidemiologic outbreak curves. They had to shut down the plants out of the southern countries in Africa. And it was completely useless because by that time it was in, you know, many countries across the world. I think it'll be in most countries before we know it.
Yeah, I mean, by the time you catch it, it's already community spread, in my opinion. Like, by the time somebody gets it, it's too late to close down borders and stop everybody from traveling. We're still having a problem, doctor, with early treatment, in that we have a number, if you just look at Dr. Marek's lawsuit, a number of hospitals. I lost a friend who was unable to get access to early treatment, and then they've refused to treat him in the hospital. And this is kind of widespread. And as I listened to you on Joe Rogan yesterday and what you were saying about this sort of doctors using this rule instead of this guidance as a rule or law instead of being able to treat their patients, what can Americans do to get the medicines that are in your early treatment protocol to help them if they've got pharmacies and doctors who won't prescribe them?
Americans need to pre-negotiate. I get way too many calls when people say, I got COVID-19, and I'll say, well, what's your action plan? Well, I don't know. And it's like, well, here we are. You know, we're 2 years into this. Everybody's had many doctor's visits with their primary care doctor. Every patient should ask their primary care doctor, do you treat COVID? Yes or no? If you don't treat COVID, who do you refer to? Where do I go to? Everybody should have a COVID-19 action plan at this stage. It shouldn't be a surprise. I can't tell you how many calls I get where it's a surprise. There's been no action plan. In fact, I get calls where people say, well, my loved one is near the ventilator. And I said, well, I had one yesterday. How many days have they been sick? 29.
Wow.
It's like, wow, why are you calling me on day 29? What about day one? So everybody should have an action plan. And everybody, Tracy, should have a COVID treatment kit in their house. Let me tell you what should be in it. Everybody should have a plastic bottle of povidone iodine or betadine. And betadine is basically, it's a 10% solution. It's a brown liquid that we use to sterilize wounds in the emergency room. You'll see this. Any of you been in the hospital, you know what betadine is. And what you do is you take 2 teaspoons and 6 ounces of water, put a little pinch of salt in it, make a little solution, and spray that up your nose, sniff it back and spit it out your mouth, and then gargle with it. And do that on days that you leave the house and you could have come in contact with COVID. I'm talking about going out to the grocery store, going to a doctor's office, going to a party, a football game, you know, just get in the habit. People have been focusing on hand sanitizer. It's not a hand infection. It is hand sanitizer is completely useless. You breathe it in the air and it goes in the nose, and you have to sterilize your nose about once a day to kill the COVID-19. Now, if there's iodine allergy or can't use iodine, go ahead and use dilute hydrogen peroxide, same type of method. And if it stings up in the nose and mouth, it's too strong. Make it more dilute. It takes very little to kill the virus. So povidone iodine preferred. Next, hydrogen peroxide. That's in the toolkit. What else is in the toolkit? Zinc, 50 milligrams of elemental zinc. Vitamin D3, 5,000 units of vitamin D3. Vitamin C, 3,000 milligrams. Quercetin, 500 milligram tablets. That's in the treatment kit. And then an over-the-counter antacid, antihistamine, Pepcid or Famotidine. And that would be 80 milligrams a day of Famotidine. That's in the kit. And that kit is ready to go for treatment. The povidone iodine and the hydrogen peroxide are for everyday prevention. I'm now using this in my practice, Tracy, and I'm not using hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin for prevention. Since the randomized trials, now 9 studies, over 2,000 patients, the oral nasals are so effective, we don't need anything else to prevent COVID-19. They're more effective, by the way, than vaccines. And Bangladesh, and I give them credit, Dr. Chaudhary did the critical pivotal trial. Bangladesh is a country of 160 million individuals in really crowded conditions. They're down to 0 cases. They basically have no Delta outbreak. It's been stunning what they've done with oral nasal virucidal therapy.
And so basically, this probably helps in a number of different ways. Common cold, flu, any respiratory virus, I would assume, would kind of be caught dead in its tracks by this method, correct?
That's correct. I learned this from ENT doctors and dentists. I'm really mad at myself, Tracy, for not knowing it sooner. Now, the Chaudhary paper broke this year and published in the peer-reviewed literature. But my wife and I had COVID-19 last fall, and I remember it literally just baking in my nose for about 3 days. I could feel it building. And I wish I would have known. I would have gotten a spray bottle of povidone iodine and blasted it every 4 hours like they did in the Chaudhary trial. And I would have knocked down the viral load. And chances are I would have gotten through COVID so much easier. Instead, it baked in my nose for 3 or 4 days, and then it went into my lungs. So I think there's so much. And I'm doing this in my patient practice now based on the science of the oral nasal virucidal therapy. And it's so rewarding. We are taking COVID-19 and we're making it such a milder illness. I still use the other drugs, but I sleep a lot easier now because I know we're knocking down the viral load of the Delta variant in the nose first. And this can be done on day one. So patients should have this ready. They shouldn't be scrambling for it once they get COVID-19.
They could do it prophylactically too. Do you know off the top of your head, you do, I'm sure, what the rates are versus placebo if somebody's doing this as a prophylactic?
It's roughly 75% reduction. So wow. It's actually better than vaccines after 6 months. And of course, if you've taken a vaccine, you still can get COVID-19. So you still would need to do this.
So let's talk about the quote vaccines really quickly. So, you know, we're hearing a lot, we're learning a lot as basic humans here about the immune system, how it works, about cytokinetic T cells and about B cells and how antibodies aren't supposed to float around in the blood 24/7 for 6 months. That's not what really gets the virus in the first place. How are vaccinated people now, A, contributing to the issues that we're seeing outside of adverse events in the short term? And, you know, what are we looking at for the unvaccinated, uninfected person out there who's never had COVID and has not gotten a vaccine, as the vaccinated tend to breed more mutations within them? Is that just going to affect vaccinated people, or how do the normal people stack up next to that?
Yeah, the concern is, for instance, with Delta, because the viral loads are so high, let's say there's a vaccinated worker and they pick up the Delta variant. And when people are asymptomatic, they can't spread it, whether they had the vaccine or not. But they get to that threshold of symptoms. And you know how it is when you're coming down with a cold and you get to that point where you start to have a runny nose, some nasal congestion. If that happens in the workplace and you're in a conference room and, you know, you're fully vaccinated and the person working with you at work is also fully vaccinated, that's when that transmission occurs. It takes about 3 hours of contact in a small conference room with basically air exchanges, less than 6 to 8 exchanges per hour. Then you have the recipe for a transmission. The other place that it's my hunch where there's transmission is in high density places like public restrooms, where lots of people are in and out of there. The air is heavy. There's not much air exchange. We know the virus, by the way, comes out the respiratory tract as well as the gastrointestinal tract, both ways. So we know the air could be heavy. You know, there's been one study of public restrooms that tried to do case contacting. They couldn't find it as a source of transmission, but it's still my suspicions. You know, I think about this when I watch college football and I watch pro football and everybody's in the stands. And we know data from Singapore that shows that really the virus is not transmitted outside. There's just too much airflow. The virus can't shoot like a rocket from one person to another. But you know where the transmission could occur is at halftime when people go to the restroom and they go down in the tunnels and they go in the restroom and there's a ton of people in there. I think that's where the transmission occurs. But importantly, there could be a vaccinated person who has Delta and they are at a high viral load. They get to that point of symptoms and then they transmit it to a susceptible person. And that's the great concern. So let's say we have a senior who's in a senior center and or, you know, living in a private residence. There's a fully vaccinated healthcare worker. And then sure enough, they transmit it to the senior. And there was a study in Finland by the first author is Hetamaki and colleagues, clearly showing that workers actually gave it to seniors. In fact, it was fatal in some of the years. So sadly, the vaccine program was going to try to protect people. And it's just not doing it at this stage of things right now. The vaccines are just not good enough. They simply don't prevent COVID-19. They're not sterilizing. So when the virus goes in the nose of somebody vaccinated, the antibodies are not strong enough to actually sterilize the virus. When someone's naturally immune like you, Tracy, and me, when the virus goes in our nose, do you know our T cells right away, our natural killer cells, they sterilize the virus. We can't get it again because we have robust immunity in the nasopharynx. We have a lot of lymph nodes. And kids, by the way, they have a thymus up in the upper chest and neck. They have so much cellular immunity in their nose and mouth. The kids are basically immunologic buffer. And there's no credible transmission of children to, from the virus from children to teachers, as an example. We know almost all the transmission in the home, when it does happen, is from adults to children, not vice versa. So to try to vaccinate children and position them as a human shield is really thought to be unethical and immoral.
So do you think at this point, if somebody hasn't gotten COVID, that they're just naturally immune to COVID and won't get it?
No, I think there still are susceptible people, but it's a provocative question because even the CDC admits that we have about 15% of the population. They can't get COVID no matter what. And we see households where there's 6 people in the household and 1 or 2 people don't get COVID every time. And so that may be what's called cross immunity, that they have enough exposure to other coronaviruses that they just can't get COVID. And that's the hypothesis for teachers. You know, from the very beginning, elementary school, daycare, and junior high teachers were the lowest risk occupations because maybe because they have so much exposure from other coronaviruses. but a leading research done at a center in Ventura Hills, California by Dr. Sabine Hazen has shown that it's the microbiome. So it turns out the microbiome that people think of in their GI tract extends all the way up into the nasopharynx. There's a continuum of bacteria in different, basically what's called flora, or different populations of bacteria in different parts of the GI tract. But those in her research that have the healthiest microbiome, they can't get COVID. And she studied couples where they've had tons of exposure with one another, and one of the two people doesn't get COVID. And every time it's because they have a healthier microbiome. She's able to score the microbiome from very healthy to very unhealthy. And the lead bacteria that seems to be the defender is called Bifidobacter. Bifidobacter. And so it makes sense that, you know, the virus settles up in the nose, but if you have a population of bacteria in such a way that, in a sense, can kind of fight off the virus for you, you can't get sick with COVID-19.
Super interesting. And also another really interesting thing that you brought up yesterday when I was listening to Rogan was that people who are taking certain SSRI medications are seemingly more protected from COVID. Is it because of some psychological, you know, they're happier, they're in a better mood, you know, they've got kind of more serotonin uptake, the way that the brain and the cells are processing it? Or is it something in that medicine?
That's the first time I've received that question, Tracy. And I have to tell you, that's a real tribute to your journalism. SSRIs, or serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and then SNRI, serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, are common drugs for depression and anxiety. Of interest, there are three randomized trials with an SNRI called fluvoxamine, or Fluvox, the most recent one from Brazil. And this is done in acute COVID-19, and it's been associated with reductions in hospitalizations and death. Some have hypothesized that there is this kind of brain infection connection. Others, my view is maybe a bit simpler, that I know there's some anxiety with COVID-19, and that some of the hospital admissions are actually driven by anxiety. And the paper to point to is by Fillmore and colleagues, published by the VA. And I was struck by that paper, where they describe that 45% of people admitted with COVID-19 never have an oxygen saturation below 94%, meaning that they weren't admitted for respiratory reasons. They were admitted, actually, I think anxiety drove it. And then once they show up to the hospital, they're put in isolation, and then there they are in the hospital. And so what may reduce some of the anxiety and stop some of these trips to the hospital is actually fluvoxamine. I also think a role for these drugs is going to be in long COVID or post-COVID syndrome. And I've had plenty of patients with brain fog, generalized anxiety, sometimes some peripheral neuromuscular types of complaints. And I end up using a blend of drugs in the absence of any randomized trials. Now, one of them is fluvoxamine, and I've had good results for that. So it's affordable, it's generic. And because there are supportive data, I tend to use drugs where there's supportive data in acute COVID for the long COVID syndrome, because the pathophysiology is an extension of what we know is the injurious part of the virus, which is the spike protein.
Soon to be banned now, right? I mean, you know, this seems to be the trend. I have a friend, a very dear friend, who had COVID pretty badly, Delta, and we were able to keep her out of the hospital, but she was sick for about 3 weeks. My friend is losing clumps of hair now. She had COVID very badly. She got better after a couple weeks because we really pounded it early, like, you know, with your guidance, you, what you'd been talking about. And long story short, she's losing all of her hair. Have you seen patients like this? And if so, what have you done?
Yeah, I have. And it's a marker of severe illness. I guarantee you this person almost certainly had severe COVID. And this is similar to what we'd see with a severe pneumococcal or staphylococcal pneumonia. Hair will be lost. I bet there's fingernail changes as well. So this is a sign the body's been under a tremendous catabolic strain. I've seen weight loss, and weight loss disproportionately on muscle mass. And the average person does lose considerable weight with COVID. We know the spike protein stays in the body now for up to a year and a half after respiratory COVID. That's the reason why people feel bad. They have long COVID. It's the spike protein. Dr. Bruce Patterson has shown that in a preprint published July 29th of this year. And so I think vitamin supplementation is in order. Biotin, 12,000 micrograms twice a day is advised. Many are looking for, you know, other solutions. We desperately need randomized trials for post-COVID syndrome. And because the vaccine injuries are so similar. We also need the same centers to do randomized trials for the vaccine injuries. The vaccine injuries are all also related to the spike protein, since the vaccines install the genetic material for the body to produce large quantities of the spike protein, which again take probably a year and a half to clear out of the body. So, Tracy, I have about a minute left for one final question.
Oh, goodness. Well, I guess I'll just go here. There are a number of people. Yesterday, I saw a TikTok video of a patient in a hospital in New Hampshire. She was recording talking about how there was a dad who called his PCP and said, "My son's not really feeling well. I've been giving both my sons ivermectin and prophylaxis for COVID." And what ended up happening was the state filed an order to take this man's children away from him. We're in a place where people are terrified to call their doctors. They're terrified to go into the hospital. What's your advice for people who need medical care but don't trust any of the medical establishment anymore?
I tell you, we desperately need to return to normal. I think the day the vaccines are pulled off the market and the vaccine program is shut down will be a national holiday. If we simply return to normal and just treat COVID-19 as it comes up and families can just reunite on this, the vaccines are just not effective enough or safe enough to become a wedge in family members. It's seen how many divorced parents, one wants vaccines and the other one doesn't. The vaccines are still research. There's still a lot more to learn on the vaccines. There have been so many deaths, injuries, permanent disabilities after the vaccines. I don't think any well-intentioned parent would want this for their children.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again soon, doctor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
I'm sure everybody's had a better week than the good old Jesse Smollett, who was accused and found guilty of falsely reporting a hate crime. Now, I don't want to go over all the particulars of what Mr. Juicy Smollett did. All I know is you set black people back. That's what you did. Because, listen, what Jesse Smollett accused somebody of, but they didn't do, happens in the United States of America. There's hate crimes out there. And the people who say that, oh, it doesn't happen, well, it does happen. And when you, Jesse, put it on yourself to become a victim without being a victim, that makes all the rest of us seem like we're crying wolf all the time. So put his ass in jail, okay? As much as I hate somebody for being racist and doing what he accused other people of doing, I hate him as much for falsely accusing or trying to get by and being the victim in that case. So I don't care if you're white, black, indifferent. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. You shouldn't be a fan of Juicy Smollett, okay? I know that I am not.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.